Right, well, this is it. We're in the caravan, which is situated in Warwick Arts Centre on Tossle Field, isn't it? Is that the official name of the field that we're in? So it's a very different environment to see Alan, and this is the first time I've ever met Paddy. So, but we're just going to take this chance to get to know how you both feel about this event kind of coming to Warwick Arts Centre. Particularly, obviously, for you to host an event like this that takes it out of the centre itself and over to here.
It's a natural extension and a very successful presentation, I think. The thinking behind this was that, you know, Foots Barn are really old friends from the very beginning of the company, where they toured into the studio and Warwick Arts Centre in the late 70s and early 80s.
Right.
With some seminal productions, Hamlet and Lear.
We think it's Lear and Hamlet, and some people say Macbeth as well, so...
Right, OK.
I've been trying to look up the history.
Okay.
So I think one can.
So, you know, in the early days of Warwick Arts Centre, Foots Barn were one of those seminal companies who were touring the country producing a particular brand of work, really, which maybe we want to explore later with you. And then, you know, mythologically, Foots Barn disappeared from the UK, made various sort of re-entries for occasional productions, and I suppose in the heads of those of us who knew Foots Barn, that, you know, we have this sort of romantic image of a caravanserai travelling the world, and then we hear, you know, in the, you know, 2007 that there's a planned return to the UK for a bit, for a bit of a tour. So we grabbed the chance. I mean, I suppose the important thing here was we knew that they were planning to recreate the early 90s production of Mr. Mount Street.
Right, okay.
And with a sort of busy programme that we've had throughout the year, it seemed an ideal celebratory moment to invite Foots Barn to join us for this sort of end week of the term to... And coincidentally, over midsummer.
Yeah, that's right.
And the beginning of our tour in England, the first real tour that we've done since we left, really, in England. This is the first major tour. We played in London once at the Lift Festival. That's the last time we played Midsummer Night's Dream in England. And we played at the Salisbury Festival, which was 5 or 6 years ago, with a piece called Perchance a Dream, which was a mixture of five Shakespeares. And then we've made several little returns to Cornwall, which was our own sort of private affair, working with our friends, with I mean, really doing it on box office, because we have to go back there sometimes. But Warwick as well is a bit special, and it mustn't be taken in the wrong way. It was when we were here was one of the big decisions that we would leave the country, and, and it really does do with
that. To do with Warwick.
But it, no, but in the right way, that we could feel that we would, you know, thank God that we were invited here to play Hamlet and the shows that we were performing, because we must perform, otherwise we don't live. And there's no sense to life if we don't play. But when we were here, we were seeing the next winter approaching, and I think I saw a picture of Portugal in a travel agent. And, we sort of were thinking, we were about to produce the Marquez play, The Very Old Man With, I think I'm getting my history right, A Very Old Man With Enormous Wings, which is a beautiful short story of Marquez, and we saw these pictures of Portugal, and it was cold, I think, and we said, well, isn't it cheaper to go somewhere else and rehearse in the winter, and then bring that show back? So for the first time we tempted, John Kilby was our administrator. Then we said, I just phoned John and said, well, we've decided to rehearse in Portugal, John. Could you sort that out? And he literally drove away in a car, found someone in Lisbon who was connected to the theatre, found a place out in the middle of nowhere in Alentejo, where now the other actor who's still with us, Joey, lives. He has his house there. He fell in love with it. He has a little farm there. And we headed off with one bus and tents, and we put the tent up in the middle of a eucalyptus forest. No water or electricity. I mean, we got the water from below, from a well. And we had all the kids with us, and the whole thing. And we rehearsed this Marquez play, which was the last thing we created for England. We then went back to Cornwall and played. We did a tour with this. Mm-hmm. It was called Tall Stories, because we were always extremely reluctant to pay authors' rights because we never had any money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a terrible thing to admit, so we used to change titles. Well, this was called Tall Stories. We did one of Marquez and one of Borges. Mm-hmm. And one night, Marquez's agent came to see the show in Barcelona and said, I recognise that. And then she said, but it was so fantastic, there's no problem, call it what it is. So that was very nice. But it was part of the... So it's a funny story, because it wasn't because we wanted... But we did really feel we needed to move.
Yeah.
And the travelling is, to me, it's the still the centre of what we are. Mm. And the fact we're an international group, that's when all that really began. Already in Hamlet, my first wife, or not wife, but my first partner, I think is the term, she was a German actress, and she was in the group at that stage. So that was already beginning the mixing up. Mm-hmm. And that is what's really developed. Once we left England, we started to meet people in Portugal, in Italy. And
do you, is it a kind of process of collection, like you kind of share skills, kind of like you say, oh, how does that relationship...
I think it's you just, you get attracted or not.
You know?
And if you see the work, the violinist who, she's not here, the Polish violinist, we have a Polish and Indian musician now, which is all through contact, through... travel.
Is that the girl that was the tightrope walker in the one in the Globe?
No, she's the daughter of someone who worked with us in the Molière project. The Polish violinist was the girl who played with, do you remember the Ophelia, which was the Japanese lady?
Right, okay.
But she was the violinist who was next to, who was, there were the three of them. There was Muriel, who's Helena, who's French, Polish violinist, and Japanese artist.
This nature of a sort of, you know, a growing internationalism is important to us. I mean, that's one of the reasons. Mm. I wouldn't have any old tented company come to do Midsummer Night's Dream. It would have to be a company that brought us something special in with, and fitted in with the rest of the Arts Centre, you know, theatre programme, which is increasingly international. You know, this year, who have we had? The Russians from Cheap Pajow and Peter Brook's Fragments, and you know, a range of work. And I think it's particularly with an archetypal production like Midsummer Night's Dream, you know, a lot of people think they know the story, but so you see completely different inflections when you have, you know, a score that, you know, a musical accompaniment which brings you the Indian subcontinent, you know, and a Japanese Titania, you know. I mean, it just gives it a something which our audience, I think, are becoming to, you know, expect that you're not going to get. A very English, white, middle-class production at Warwick Arts Centre. This is a very competitive area. Mm-hmm. Stratford's just 20 miles away.
It is, isn't it? And we are in Shakespeare's country.
Yeah.
Mm. I was very happy to drive past that sign on the motorway.
Oh, yeah.
It's quite something. It's just played the Globe, but then we're in Shakespeare's country. Something's happening. We have to be careful.
Yes, supposedly, your tent's in the Forest of Arden, I think, somewhere.
But the international thing, I mean, the mixture of cultures for me is something. I mean, the world is now, you walk down the streets in any major city of the world and you'll be hearing different languages. We're not, thank God. I mean, we mustn't try and all keep on. I mean, we have to keep our identities, but let's not get extreme.
And
politics can be very extreme.
And
it's very difficult to use international artists. I mean, to get the visa for Chandran, and sometimes it's hell to get the Japanese, like Akemi and Mass, to come here. They had to spend days in Paris, and they feel like you're not wanted.
It's getting worse, too.
Horrible. It is getting worse. I think part of our actual work, philosophically and socially, and God, I might say all the words, politically and everything, is to absolutely defend that people of different cultures and nationalities can work together.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the world, if we can't meet and mix, then we're not going to find the possible harmony that that could produce.
And I guess that that kind of goes with the travelling kind of community, doesn't it? That kind of idea that you
can... I mean, we've toured India 3 times now, and that is just an extraordinary experience. The Chandran, the musician, I mean, he's been working with us pretty much constantly for 13 years now. I mean, he goes home, I mean, we now work it out that he can go back to his family because he's got children there. And but we had 5 Indians in the group after we'd been in India for, and that's quite something. And it shifts everything around about language, about... But then you suddenly discover that you could act with an Indian or a Polish person, and even if we speak our own languages, drama can still exist.
That's it.
Which is what I am intrigued by.
But I think that's that's a really interesting idea, you know, because I mean, Futsbarn are, you know, are renowned for taking on archetypal classic texts, you know. I mean, not just that, I mean, there are lots of other things. You fool about as well. But in many ways, these are, these, you know, there are, as you've seen in this production and the audience reaction to it from, you know, 8-year-olds upwards, the people are responding to stories that they think they, well, they might not know, but they actually do know them because they're presented with sort of universal archetypes on stage, you know, and that's one of the things that I think is exceptional here. And it actually takes, it's not an easy thing to do in terms of conception of a production and how you how you perform it, actually, and what skills you need to do that. They're not, then these aren't easily acquired, particularly in a tent to audiences from all over the world. And I suppose, you know, Paddy talks about quite a lot about clowns and, and being trained as a clown. You know,
the clown,
people
real
spent
clown.
80 years perfecting the art of being a clown.
The real, I mean, Jacques Lecoq was my teacher, which there's many, and of 2 other performers on stage. The Japanese actress, she went through that school. She studied in Japan as well, both puppetry and classical dance, and then she did a workshop with us, and she was the most unpushy person that you can imagine, but she was obviously shining. And then she just said to me, end the workshop, if ever you would like a Japanese actress, and I would like now to work with language, and there she is. But and Joey, who's the other actor who plays Oberon, who's been in the company as long as myself, although he's been away for a period to do with health and family. Not health and safety. And he is trained. He never went to a theatre school, but he worked with Futsbarn, which means he's worked always with actors who have been through Lecoq. The positive side of Lecoq. There are sides that are brought up about indulgence and all these things. But that's not Jacques. That's that's the student, not What Jacques gave us was the thing of working always with people from all over the world. And always through improvisation, and discovery, and physical, and pleasure, and generosity, and fantasy. And Jack, one of the last times we saw him, he said to me he was frightened because he felt that the youth were losing the two essentials of generosity and the imagination. I mean, I'm sorry to say that. And that the world is shifting, and everything is there. And he's got this great expression that says, que dans l'urgence qu'on trouve l'essentiel. It's only in urgency that you find the essential. That's a good phrase. I'm the teacher, I'm the obstacle.
And
you've
got to
get over me.
It's also true of a lot of drama where, so, you know, some of the best drama comes out of situations in conflict, and where people are up against the wall.
No conflict, no drama.
But
the clown, he saw our production of Lear. He hadn't seen anything. He came to Lyon. We weren't in the tent, unfortunately, but we were in a good space. And afterwards, he was just, he was so blown away. He was a man, a bon vivant, a man that liked to eat, drink, and enjoy. And we had a fantastic meal, and a lot came out. And he took a poster. He said, I'm going back to close the school. He got all quite dramatic. He said, it's happened again to me that I see it's the students that are going to take me further. And it's really confirmed the belief that it's the clown that can play tragedy, Whereas you get a tragic actor who's never felt the other side, he's not going to be a clown.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, the clown is the vulnerable one, you see. Mm. It's the, we talk about the clown without the nose, huh? I mean, not without the nose, but the a clown is a vulnerable creature, and therefore he can be pushed into any space, really. And he will always try to survive.
Yeah.
But it's sort of remarkable that a production, or a series of productions, can actually play in India and Australia and Europe to large audiences who will get it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, that, I mean, and that actually is, that's something quite special within a, within any theatre company,
let
alone one who've actually made a particular decision not to tour the world into, you know, velvet houses, but to tour the world and play largely to, you know, in communities, because you pitch your tent in a community space, you are invited in, and
the aim of the theatre company, you know, that, which is always different. There is to take theatre where it doesn't exist.
Yes, yeah.
To all levels of pub, to make it accessible.
Yeah.
But the storytelling is the thing that we always used as our manifesto, in a way, that the story is what's got to be told. And if you keep telling the story, you avoid the indulgence that maybe can happen, because you've got to tell the story in order that the public will receive it, particularly when the language is only one element. So as long as you're telling the story, whether it's through picture, through emotion, situation is what theatre's all about in the end. It's about character, situation, and the magic.
Oh, I saw this last summer. I saw Midsummer Night's Dream last summer. At a rather beautiful Spanish medieval town, where they hold a festival,
a classico,
which is really nothing is allowed after the 17th century, really, no text or production. And this was a largely young, actually, Spanish audience.
They were local. We managed to get the locals because we did a parade just before every night, and we did actually attract. And they kept the ticket prices down.
Yeah, they did.
But that's always been our desire. I mean, when we went to Portugal, we toured Portugal with a show with no language in it at all, based on an English mumming play called The Doctor, the Devil and the Fool.
So a young Spanish audience who got it. I mean, they didn't, you know, I don't think they had, you know, qualifications in English. But here was a play that, you know, it's not an easy play, but it has an archetypal, has a series of archetypal storylines and characters, which we'd all understand, a dream world, something metaphysical about it, the you know, the mistaken identities in love, changed identities, the you know,
the effect of drugs.
Yes. Mushrooms.
the
mechanicals who you know, you meet often, don't you?
Yeah.
Those people. Yeah. Who want to make a play?
Who want to do it well? And they really want to do it well.
I guess that's the
and they die for love
thing about, like, kind of like trying to be transcultural, isn't it? Like trying to cut across cultures, and that it's kind of an interesting thing, because you use so many different cultures and cultural traditions and all the people that you have on board. But then by doing that, because you kind of move away from specific language and the barriers that language presents, you almost cut that down to kind of allow a variety of audiences to come and watch.
But I mean, that's been our aim, and we've stuck to it. And as I repeat again, in Portugal was the most astonishing for me. We played four nights. It was supposed to be in Lisbon, and there was a problem with something. And we ended up in a small town called San André, and worked with a local teacher at the school, whose drama is, who runs his own festival every year. We had 500 people in there every night, busloads from Lisbon, all the locals, and I mean, we have it on film. It's as if they get every punchline. So that must be about. I mean, the actor actually is not just the word. He's Lecoq's training brings this physical presence that, you know, your body is actually expressing the what's going on.
But I suppose it's just a reference, really, thinking about that question, is last year we saw from the RSC, the same play, mm-hmm. Midsummer Night's Dream, mm-hmm. directed by Tim Supple, who'd gone to India,
mm-hmm. yes, new mixed language,
to recruit an Indian yeah. cast, mm-hmm. And musicians. Mm-hmm. Who spoke a number of Indian languages, mm-hmm. not just one.
Mm-hmm.
And here was, and this very successful production,
yeah,
which is now, touring the world, courtesy of the British Council, and yeah. it's been successfully staged in both Stratford and London and all that sort of stuff. But completely different.
Yeah.
In a sense, this was saying Shakespeare translates to this culture.
Mm.
Rather in a, and therefore all that stuff about universality, mm. which of course is true, rather than that complete transcultural sense which you get from a Footspan production.
I mean, we tried.
Let's forget the issue of resources. I'm sure the RSC spent millions on it. But,
we were a bit frustrated by that because we'd been in India 10 years ago producing The Odyssey, based on Homer, with Indian artists, mm-hmm. and bringing it to Europe and mm-hmm. playing in mixed language. We had 5 languages on stage, mm-hmm. 6.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't, the British Council would never give us.
Right.
Not a
penny.
Not a lot of pennies.
Why do you think?
Because we're not the RSC or the National. Sorry, we're the itinerants who've left. In, I mean, I don't know, maybe that opinion will change.
Yeah, it's kind of
a very delicate thing to talk about, I mean, we were considered to be, we were outside that. I mean, that's a great honour to have been invited to the Globe, and thank you again, Dominic, and thank you for inviting us back here. It's good to feel at least you some recognition, because, I mean, for example, that thing of Midsummer Night's Dream, I think Tim saw it as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we had been out there 10 years ago doing that,
mm-hmm.
and we couldn't get the help.
Mm.
But we did it, that's the way we really.
No, I wouldn't want to unduly protect the British Council, but Footspan is now a company supported by the French state with a base in France. And
It's so complicated because we're taking Shakespeare to the world.
Yes, I know.
And which Europe now, and we're a British founded company.
I think the state has.
I mean, it's a bit. It could still help us a bit. There's no reason that different people can't help us.
No, I think the state has to catch up with Footspan.
They mustn't get in the state of Footspan.
I think these issues. And the first issue you brought up, which I think is the position increasingly that our states, and I don't think it's just Britain, is making life much more difficult. The fact that you have to apply and gather a number of points before you can cross the border.
Yeah.
You don't get to the border and then come in and get your points. Yeah. You have to go and present yourself if you're an artist.
Yeah, I mean, really,
I've been arguing this for about 4 years when this was on the horizon, that we are, because of this border control mm-hmm. activity, which mm-hmm. is supposedly about counter-terrorism, but actually is affecting everybody. It's that, who's going to own up in class? If you don't own up, we'll have you all.
Mm-hmm.
Syndrome. We stand the chance, I think, of ending up as Little Britain.
Yeah.
With those international influences almost entirely eradicated, because the bureaucracy involved and the implications for the state of having foreigners amongst us is just too much.
Yeah, and we could invade, take other people's lands, do what we want, and then use those people later to do some of the work that we maybe don't want to do.
These are paradoxes.
It's a very complicated thing.
So, I in a sense, an invitation to Footspan to come here is as much a political statement about what I see as the forces of Philistinism, which may be unintended.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the state intended this. I think they want fantastic international festivals.
Yeah.
They want all that, but they don't understand the implications of anti-terrorist legislation, all the things that go on around it. The fact, it really, does Al-Qaeda want to sort of live in a caravan and do shows?
Ben, Been there, done that. I did get stopped once in Holland. We were driving down the motorway in an old truck, not this one, one before we even had a wood-burning stove, and we used to cook in it while we were driving. You know, it was in the days when we really didn't have any. We just had to keep alive, yeah, whatever we could find. And I got pulled off the road by the police, and we got taken, and we didn't have our passports with us because we were having them redone because we were about to travel to another country, so we got no papers. So off the motorway into the police station. They said, "Would you go in this room, please?" I said, that's a prison cell. You're not going to lock us in. He said, "Would you go in there, please?" And he locked the whole group up. I stayed outside because it was my truck and they wanted to talk to me. And they actually thought we were terrorists. They were looking, they were filming up the chimney and looking for the bombs. And my poor little daughter was crying. Yeah. And I was devastated. But yeah, I mean, do they go around in trucks?
I don't think so.
Where are they? The enemy.
I don't gotta have one. I don't think they're making productions of this.
No,
no.
But it's very, it's very troubling still for like mass, the Indian, the Javanese. The other day when they were doing their visas, they were very, very anxious.
So it goes from that journey that you've been on from in Cornwall to now. I mean, that's kind of spanned a lot of our kind of political history, that's in the making at the moment as well, through theatre, actually. It's quite an interesting thing. But thank you so much. We've taken a lot of your time. Have we-